Welcome to Voices in Art, where we at Marshfield TV talk with artists from around the South Shore about their work, career, and life. In this episode, you'll hear me have a very pleasant conversation with the executive director at the South Shore Art Center and writer, Patrice May. We discuss Patrice's first poems, her education in Ireland, and her life now as a mother and writer. We also talked about some of the amazing programs going on over at the South Shore Art Center. So take a listen and enjoy this lovely conversation with writer Patrice May.
So I'm Patrice May, and my current position is as executive director of South Shore Art Center. But the journey towards that has been that I have been a poet since before I could physically write. I used to, you know, come up with little rhymes, and then I've always written poetry. My favorite birthday gifts as a little girl, like 6 and 7, would be the little black moleskin books that my parents would get me, and I would write my little poems, and they used to be, you know, caustic attacks on my sisters and and love notes to my cat, but they've progressed a little.
So that's where you started as a kid, writing
that's
poems?
That's where I started.
Do you remember some of your earliest poems you ever wrote?
Oh,
do you have one maybe that you call up?
Well, there's one. My mother, sorry, Mom, you have to forgive me. yes, and it was in my diary. And of course, diaries are not sacrosanct. And
yes.
My mother wanted to check up on, she discovered something she didn't love. And it was, my mother dead, she looks more like mud. I don't remember the rest because it's been, it's been erased from my mind. But my mother was
dead, horrified. When she found that.
She didn't even try to hide it. She was like, the first there was the big scream. You wrote this? And I was like, oh.
But you looked in my diary.
What were you doing in there? You
yeah.
Know? Yeah.
That's so funny.
And then there was the ones on my sister, and my sister changed all the places where I had said, you know, she was ugly and mean, and wrote nice and beautiful. And I was like, really? I have no, that's what happens when you're the youngest, right?
Oh, right. You're the youngest.
I'm the youngest,
okay.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So can you tell me a little bit about your poetry? What inspires you? What's your poetry generally about? Like,
yeah, no. So it began, honestly, as it was catharsis, you know, so a lot of it, particularly when I was younger, was I'm so mad and I'm gonna take it out. Mm-hmm. And this is how I'd express it. And then there were the love poems. But then I got older and I got inspired by other poets that I had been reading. I love Ted Hughes. I love E.E. Cummings. And William Butler Yeats is my all-time favorite, you know, so I liked the romantic. I liked the use of imagery and language. I'm not so much into rhyme. I like assonance. I like
right.
there to be a rhythm and a song-like quality.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm. That's sort of where I came from. But poets don't often earn a living.
Right.
In today's day and world. I mean, had I been born, I always joke, if I had been born 400 years ago and I was a man.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be all set, but.
When I saw you went to the University of Ireland?
University College Galway, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that also would have been a nice place 400 years ago
to
have been a poet.
Well, that or, and that's my highly marketable degree in Irish studies.
It's pretty cool, actually. I might have gone into your LinkedIn.
I had a great time.
So. I was going to ask you, so you told me how you started as an artist when you were a kid before
yeah.
you could really even write. When did you realize it was going to transfer into something more serious for you, something that you were really going to dedicate your life to?
Actually, it was my freshman year in college. I was planning to go for pre-law. That was always my intent. I was going to be a lawyer. And I was taking poli-sci classes, and I hated them. But
yeah.
the classes that I loved were the literature ones. And I called my parents and I said, I think I'm going to switch to literature. I, you know, they were very awesome and they were paying for college, so I sort of felt like they needed the heads up. But I said, yeah, I'm not going to be a lawyer. And at that time, I still was thinking I'd be a professor. And then, so that was my new career arc. And then I was getting my master's in Irish studies in Ireland, and I was thinking, you know what? I don't want to publish for, I don't want to, the publishing that I do, I want to be for me. I don't want it to be to get tenure. I want to write for myself. And that's when I realized, oh, this is a different pathway than I envisioned. So I embarked for a brief time, maybe 2 years, as an expatriate writer. I thought I was Hemingway or Fitzgerald. Again, men, you know, I don't.
Yeah, and this was in Ireland?
In Ireland. I lived for 2 years after I finished my master's just writing. And I was supporting myself by fundraising.
Okay.
And literally the kind where you'd have a can on the street and you'd say, you know, you want to help the Irish Society Prevention of Cruelty to Children. Like, literally, I would shake a can.
That's cool, though. That's how you get stuff done, right?
But it was, you know, social justice, which is my other thing that drives me. So I came back to the States, and I took a job as a receptionist, again, to support myself. And I was writing poetry and trying to write the great American novel. And someone told me about a job as a grant writer. I said, oh, I can do that. I didn't even know what it was, but it had involved writing, and I'd get paid to write.
Yeah.
And basically, it's writing grants to support social justice missions, and I loved it. And right. It was something I ended up being really good at. And I, for 16 years, was the development director at Artists for Humanity in Boston, which employs Boston teens to create art, but it gives them a pathway to prosperity, really. It gives them the keys to get a college degree, to get jobs. But the vehicle is the arts. And for me, that's my passion, the arts and, you know, young people and having social justice, having economic justice.
Yeah, helping young people through art.
It was perfect. And I loved it. And but in the meantime, I had two children, moved to Scituate, and this was in Boston. And a couple of years ago, I was part of a group that founded the Scituate Harbor Cultural District,
okay.
And I realized the impact of having or making arts experiences available and accessible to people in my own community and raising the visibility of that and changing people's ideas of what arts mean, that they're not just an extraneous thing, but they actually are vital,
mm-hmm.
that they are drivers of, you know, the cultural economy and just everything that we have. Like, this microphone was designed, right?
For art.
For, yeah.
For
so
this,
for
yeah.
this, for
yeah.
this exchange, for entertainment, but for learning. I mean, everything comes down to, or our art is inherent in everything.
It's almost like you have to ask the question, like, where's that line between what's art and what's just educational or what's just entertainment? And it does start to get gray.
It does. Everything's blurred. Everything is interdependent.
Yeah,
it's incredible. And I was also realizing that the town that I live in is very sports-centric and that I was raising two boys and I wanted them to see that the arts were important, not just for the community, but for them. And that the best way I could do that, and that mom wasn't just making opportunities for Boston teens to have art experiences, but that mom was going to bring those experiences back to Scituate and the South Shore.
I love that.
And right around that time, the position became available at South Shore Art Center for the executive director position, and I thought, I want that job.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? Oh, so you really sought that out.
Well, no. So I saw that the 15-year executive director who was in the position before me, she was retiring, and I saw that. I said, oh, I'm going to apply for that.
Yeah.
And I got it. No one was more surprised than me, and no one was more excited than me. I was thrilled, and it's been phenomenal.
And how long have you been doing that?
A year.
A year?
Yeah.
And so how's the year been?
It's been great. It's been heady. It's been, we have our festival coming up in 2 months. So when I started last year, it was 2 months before festival. And
oh,
now
cool.
we're going into our 63rd annual festival. And that's actually how the Art Center evolved. It had evolved from this festival. These group of artists were hanging out on Cohasset Common. They were painting plein air. Another person came by and said, we should really formalize this and have classes and have people do this. And we should be, you know, promoting this and showing this artwork. So they hung up some clotheslines. They hung up art. They painted live. People came. And it became an annual festival. And in the meantime, they started having the classes. It was pretty cool.
And from there was born the South Shore Arts Center?
And from there was born South Shore Arts Center.
Okay.
Exactly. And now it's huge. So it's the festival is, we have what we call five pillars. And the festival is one, which is it happens every year, Father's Day weekend, 3-day art immersion. But then we have outreach through which, here's my social justice.
I'm into this.
1,400 children from South Shore come in for free art experiences where they meet a living artist, and then they create their own artwork based on that artist's style.
Yeah.
And they take it home with them. It's completely free. And it's an art, I mean, they're in this day and age where they're contracting the arts experiences in schools, this is so important because it's making sure that they have access to that.
Right. And just grant funding in general for arts programs is going down, disappearing.
Yeah, NEA is losing its line item. MCC, which is the Mass Cultural Council, is fighting tooth and nail to make sure that their line items are met. And that's why advocacy for arts, if anyone's listening, write to your elected official and make sure that you're getting those arts experiences. They're so important.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is really almost scary to see it disappearing and shrinking away from society.
It really is. Yeah.
Because it's so key. Like, this reminds me, just a quick aside.
Yeah.
In England, I think it was in like the 40s, there was this huge effort to educate everyone on just basic artistic skills. Get everyone up to speed on being able to just draw, do a figure drawing, just paint a portrait, like,
So simply important in your
own style. And they realized that by educating and bringing this into society, it really made a huge difference in the like lives of people who were just like day laborers and stuff like that. It completely changed their lives.
The transferable skills are huge.
Yeah.
The mathematic impact, the science impact, the historical context. I mean, there's so many different levels where the arts and those basic skills have a direct correlation.
Yeah.
And people don't acknowledge it. It's very short. I mean, so I've been all part of this movement, the STEM to STEAM, because there's been such a focus, a financial focus on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, because those are the drivers of the global economy. Mm-hmm. But they don't make sense without the arts within them.
STEAM.
STEAM.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
Yeah. So that came out of RISD, actually. I can't take credit for it, but
that's
I love
really
it.
Cool. Yeah, I love that. Okay, so you've said two of the pillars.
So two of the pillars, and then we have education. So we have arts classes for all ages, all abilities, anything from, you know, the portrait drawing, the watercolor, oils, painting, to new media. Mm-hmm. We're offering animation classes for kids now, comic and sequential art, video time-lapse, digital photography, everything. It runs the gamut of it. And then we have specialty workshops that come in. So we've had our outreach, our festival, our education, our exhibitions. I think you popped in the studio and you saw the gallery with the black and white.
Yeah, everything was being set up. But yeah, I had the black and white photography exhibit. That was beautiful. I remember specifically one that stood out was the little girl in a mirror with like kind of makeup all over her face and like a dress
she was
on.
So cute. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved that.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm going to blank on the fifth one, but it'll come to me.
Yeah, it'll come by the end. We'll remember. We'll come back.
It'll come to me.
So then I'll jump to my next question. What sort of things? So you said when you were younger, it was like love and frustration that was inspiring you to write. Now, what is it that really gets you writing?
You know what? I get inspired by just moments in life. You know, sometimes I'll just hear a word and I'll start doing wordplay in my head and something evolves. Other times I'll be really intentional, but it could be anything. It is family a lot. My cat, he's very special.
What kind of cat?
I have a black and white cat, just a tabby.
What's your tabby's name?
Oh. Fu Manchu, but I call him Fuzzy.
I love that so much. That's the best.
My husband calls him FU, which isn't nice. And I remembered the fifth pillar.
Yes, okay.
Which
good.
You save the last for best, right?
Yeah.
The best for last. Artist advancement, which is really at the heart and speaks to everything that we do. It's because artists are the core of South Shore Art Center, and so it's how we can uplift and promote the artists in our community and give them opportunities to profile their work, to exchange with other people, refer them, have opportunities to sell their work. That's a core part of our mission.
Well, I mean, it kind of sounds like that last pillar, it's basically all of them.
Exactly. It fits into all of the other four.
Right, because, I mean, everything you're doing is helping people who aren't artists advance into becoming an artist.
That's
or people who have the potential to become artists. And then you're helping people who have become artists move forward into, like, making a career out of it.
That's
and then
right.
people who are careered artists make more out of their career.
You could be our spokesperson.
Well, you've explained it really well.
Thank you.
You've explained it really well. That's really cool. So, let's see. You've explained your career, really. I mean, you've explained how everything went. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen in your work since where you started to where you are now?
That's a really good question. And from where I started, it was very, you know, Mother Goose sing-song rhymes, because that's how a three-year-old experiences the world, and that's the kind of reading that they have. As I grew older, I experimented with a lot of different, you know, when you're in high school and in college, the work that you're reading is sonnets and villanelles, and you want to challenge yourself and see, can I master that form?
Yeah.
And I think I've broken free of all of that and have really found my own voice, where I'm not constricted by that. I'll still write within a specific form, but I seem to have created my own meter, where it's not iambic pentameter anymore. It's just sort of, but there is a specific rhythm that I tend to follow, unless sometimes I'm intentionally discordant, depending on what's happening. But generally, it's more, even if the material is dark, the sounds, that assonance is kind of almost like a lullaby,
mm-hmm.
So that there's a masked violence.
Oh, ooh, I love that. Okay, so that was a great answer to that question.
Oh,
sorry.
Thank you.
You just got me. Can I ask you, so what was one of your proudest moments as an artist, as a poet?
Well, it's actually funny. So a couple of years ago, my oldest son is now in ninth grade. When he was in seventh grade, they had asked the school, Gates Middle School, said, can you, if you know any writers, would like to have a writer's panel. And so I volunteered. And I said that I would volunteer as someone who made a living in writing and grant writing, where it was it could transcend the literary and be a commercial skill. So I was fully intending to say, I'm a grant writer, I'm up at the panel, there's four other people there. And when it came my turn to introduce myself, I said, I'm a poet. And I shocked myself by saying that. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna say that now, what am I gonna say? And I mean, it's true, I've always written poetry, but I hadn't published in a really long time. And I remember we were telling the kids, you know, if you're writing, just write. It doesn't matter. And just keep at it and just be brave. And I came off that stage and I thought, I'm a fraud, because I've been talking about this and I haven't put myself out there in a really long time. So I thought, I'm going to have to submit some work somewhere. And at the time I was working in Boston, and Boston was having this call for poets to submit works that if they were selected, they would be installed for 6 months at Town Hall. All right, I'll put my name in. We'll see what happens. And I got selected. And I had one of my poems was at Boston City Hall for 6 months, and I was there for the ceremony, and I read my poem, and I made connections there. People were like, wow, that was a great poem. And that was a big moment for me, because I stepped outside my comfort zone. I hadn't done it in a really long time, and it was exciting, and I felt like, okay, I get this. Like, yeah. I this is what I need to be doing.
Oh, I love that. It's almost like it was like one of your darker moments led into one of your best.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And I started feeling like I need to start identifying this way, and I need to put my money where my mouth is.
Right.
Yeah.
And it hung for 6 months. When was it? This was just this last year?
This was 2 years ago.
2 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, March of 2016 is when they hung it, yeah.
Yeah. So what sort of stuff are you working on now?
Right now, I'm actually doing something called The Artist's Way. Have you heard of that?
No.
Julia Cameron wrote a book about 25 years ago, may even be longer, but I have the 25th edition.
Okay, yeah.
And she used to be married, I want to say it's Martin Scorsese she used to be married to, but she was married to a famous film producer, and she was a director herself. And then when her marriage broke up, she descended into alcohol, and she kind of wrote this. It's almost like a 12-step for artists,
mm-hmm.
Where it's regaining your artist's your creative recovery, and it doesn't matter what your medium is or what your genre is. It's mm-hmm. it's for any creative person. I mean, you could be a culinary artist,
right.
But it's to regain that sense of I can create art, and it's been fascinating. So every morning I have to write what's called morning pages. You have three pages that you have to write. It takes about a half hour, so I've been writing all of these every morning, and it's kind of, it's almost like automatic writing. And
okay.
That's been sort of triggering.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry about that. Hold on a second. Surprise, that happened. That's weird. Okay.
We were in the black for a minute, folks.
It's been triggering.
So it's been triggering interesting responses that I've just been following. So I've only been doing this for about 4 or 5 weeks, and I'm curious to see what's going to happen. So I don't really have a full answer for you right now. All I know is I'm following a new pathway.
Something is bubbling up.
Something is bubbling up, yeah. So that. A lot of my writing hasn't actually been poetry. It's been sort of just this prose. And you're not supposed to think about it when you write it. And that's really hard for a writer.
With automatic writing.
It's supposed to be like a stream of consciousness. Right. And that's really hard for me not to go back and change things. And I do find myself like stopping and thinking and actually like thinking, you're not supposed to do this.
Yeah, totally.
But I've gotten a little bit better at allowing myself to make mistakes. It's a hard thing.
Yeah. We would have to do that in college sometimes. And I would have a lot of trouble with it too. Do you read any Virginia Woolf ever?
I have. I love Virginia Woolf. But it's funny. I was just reading The Hours.
Okay.
Which, have you heard of that? Michael Cunningham wrote a book, and I'm only in the beginning of it. I haven't gotten very far. But Virginia Woolf is one of the characters in it.
Oh,
and
cool.
Her suicide.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's a little depressing.
Yeah, dark.
But I actually had to put it down because it was, she had just weighted her coat with all these rocks. I was like, I can't.
I don't think I can read this next chapter.
I don't want to read this. I know this happened, but I don't want to read this right now.
And it's, that's an amazing story, just her whole story in general. And it's kind of interesting how she's a character in someone's book when she would turn people into characters in her
exactly.
books.
Yeah.
Like A Room of One's Own and stuff like that.
I love that.
Yeah, me too. Did you know that was actually a graduation speech?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, for All Women's College. I can't remember where. But that was just written as a graduation speech.
I had no idea.
I know, kind of interesting.
But that's something that I say a lot. And it's funny, in the artist way, you talk about impediments to being creative. And one of them, as much as, you know, my greatest creativity was my children in one way, but in other ways, those are impediments to having time to write.
Of course,
you know? And it's that resonates with me, The Room of Her Own. You need this space. But when they're little, you can't have that space, or you can't be a good parent. Like, you can't do both. And it's interesting. So for a while, my writing was suspended.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would find times and I would write things when I could, sometimes if they were asleep, but I wouldn't always make the time for it that I am able to now that my youngest is 10. I have a lot more freedom.
He can keep himself entertaining.
He can keep himself
a half hour every morning of writing. I mean, that's a lot of work, really.
It's
hard for people who don't do art and creative work to realize how hard it can be to do a half hour of your thing.
It is.
You know what I mean?
Although I will say that I'm aided a little bit because my son, my older one, the 15-year-old, goes to school in Boston, and he has to be on the 5:40 train because if he were to take the later one, he'd be late for school. So I'm up and the rest of the family's asleep.
Yep.
When I, you know, so from 6 to 6:30, I write, and then I usually let the little one sleep till 7. So I've got the time, which is kind of nice. Otherwise, I'd just be sleeping.
Right, of course, yeah.
Dozing off, which I think about a lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes the writing is, I'm very tired.
Oh, I'm sure. I feel like if I were to write at 6 in the morning or 6:30 in the morning, I would be like in this really weird sort of dreamy
headspace.
Well,
that's what's fascinating about it, because you find yourself sort of plumbing depths that you... Or maybe your subconscious, things that you think that you've buried down come up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating. Things that you didn't even realize you were thinking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's very insightful.
I used to do really early morning dream journaling, and I would find just, like, what am I writing about?
I know. It's crazy. I love dreams.
Yeah, they're great.
They're fascinating. Yeah.
So is there any other stories you'd like to share? Anything specific? Any, like, maybe... You were mentioning that you had, like, younger people working with artists and getting inspired by these living artists to do their own work.
Yeah.
Do you have any specific examples of that you'd like to share or anything like that?
Well, I think, I mean, I'm newer at Social Arts Center, but I can say that I experienced it very deeply and on a visceral level at Artists for Humanity, where I was working with teens. And even though I wasn't the one directly working with them, you know, that's a really cool story because it grew from this woman, Susan Rogerson, founded this by working with 16s. And now those 16s are mentors themselves, and they're 40. And there's 250 teens employed every year. But, you know, it's amazing to see the relationship that these teens get. Some of them come in, they've never created art, they have no experience at all, and the works that they create, because everyone has talent, and with practice and determination and discipline, it's amazing what you can create.
Yeah.
It really is. It's phenomenal. Or what they're doing in graphic design. I mean, my mind is boggled by what these young people are doing. There's, you know, some of them are as young as 14 years old, and what they're creating just fascinates me, because that's the difference between that maybe and what's happening at Social Arts Center with that one particular program is that they're all being given a project to do, but whereas the other ones are self-led. And mm-hmm. what I really love to see at the Art Center right now are those self-led projects. It's right. really cool. It's just when the young person comes up with this idea, or even my own son, he loves to just make things. He's a maker. And, you know, every year for Christmas, he asks for a ream of paper, and he asks for crayons and charcoal, a stapler, because he makes his little comic books. But he had this one, he called it an installation. It was called Tapelandia. And I allowed the installation to last for 1 month. I told him after 1 month it was over. But literally, this room that we have next to our dining room, it's always been called the playroom. And he had tape that took up like a whole length of wall, and there were Lego figures in there, and there was just like loops and loops. I mean, I don't know how much tape was in there.
I love that.
It was
so
crazy.
Much.
And I love that idea, because the world at that age, the world is theirs. They don't know what they can't do.
Right. Yeah, no one's told them
you can't do it, or that's not good. It's all like the imagination is endless. And
right.
if we could all tap back into that, can you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be phenomenal what we would be creating.
That feeling you get too when you do manage to get back in there into that like headspace.
Yeah.
It's usually when I'm creating art, I'll find myself there.
Yeah.
And it is like, it's so crazy to have feelings from when you were like 8 or 9 come back into your head.
Yeah.
It's like feelings you haven't felt your whole life. It's a really
strange
experience.
It's amazing that I know exactly what you're talking about. It's almost like a flashback, but you can feel it the way that you felt it then.
Yes.
It suffuses you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I love that you know what I'm talking about. I was like, oh, God, I might sound crazy here for a second.
No, well, not to me.
Yeah,
but we can both be crazy. Who knows?
There you go. So are there any events you'd like to plug? I know you were mentioning what you've got coming up at the Art Center.
I mean, the biggest one, I don't know when this is going to air, but next week we have an opening for an exhibit. It's called Taking Notice, Sculptors Respond to Nature, and we're going to have it couldn't be more different from the one that's up there right now, the black and white photography.
Okay.
This is going to be all sculpture. Most of it will be on pedestals, but some of it will be almost like a 2D hanging on the wall, and there's going to be suspended bats. It's going to be large scale and crazy.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that opens next week, and our exhibits are free and open. I mean, anyone can come in. That's one of the great things about South Shore Art Center is that it's like if you think of a Boston gallery, we're on par with that. People don't realize that down here you can get that.
Yeah.
And it's free. The access is, you can't beat that. It's phenomenal. And of course, we have the festival on Father's Day weekend, June 15th through 17th, which is on Cohasset Common. And there are, I mentioned there's like the 3 tents of art, but then there's 90 craft exhibitors who've all been juried in. So it's really high quality. There's jewelry, there's scarves that we have. I can't even tell you what everything is. There's clothing. It's amazing. All the different, I think pottery is in there as well, are in those exhibitors. And then we have we have a soundstage, and there is amazing performances, including we have a dance troupe from Boston coming down. We have lots of South Shore performers and bands, and we have a partnership with South Shore Conservatory, so their jazz band's going to play, and it's going to be great. It's going to just be this nonstop entertainment and excitement.
And is it like 3 days or 2 days?
3 days. Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'll have to come.
You'll have to
that
come. Absolutely. Look for me.
Yeah. And where can people who are listening to this find your poetry, read your poetry?
Oh, well, I don't really have it online.
can they go buy it? Like, do you have a book?
I don't. And it's funny. My friend keeps telling me that I have to do a blog, and I keep, you know, I haven't been really good about that. But
what about your printed work? Is that anywhere where people
It's
get
been a long
it?
Time. I printed work back when I was in college and when I had first come out of college.
Okay.
So I don't even know if you could find it anymore. And then I just stopped. I stopped publishing for a long time. I just didn't do it.
Right.
So.
Right. Well,
I went on hiatus.
That's fine. Thought I'd ask. Cool. Well, thank you so much for your
thank
time.
You. This
and that's
was
so great.
Great
to hear about an interesting artist, your history, where you came from, and how you got to where you are now.
Thank you. I enjoyed this a lot. Who doesn't like to talk about themselves?
It's really fun. Cool.
Yeah,
okay.
No.
Thank you so much for coming in.
You're very welcome. Thank you.